And welcome to another episode of the Deeper the Dough podcast. Super excited to have Nikki Corbett on the show today. Nikki, welcome.
Hi, Bennett. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Nikki, we spoke just a few weeks ago and you were in Greece and now you're back. What were you doing in Greece?
So I got this kind of feeling of monotony and like my life had turned into Groundhog's Day around the June timeframe. And I just really decided it was time to shake things up. So I sold my house, I sold most of my stuff, and I booked a one-way ticket to Europe. And I was there for almost 90 days and I just came back last week.
Awesome. And did you get what you were after? Do you feel refreshed?
You know what? I got what I was after and so much more. I think like anytime you travel, you kind of go into it with some ideas of what may happen or some ideas of what the places you're going to may feel like or look like. And this time I had a short list of goals. That list grew exponentially while I was there. Of the time I was gone, I traveled for the first 12 days. Then I spent 7.5 weeks in Thessaloniki, Greece, which is Greece's second largest city. It's their foodie capital. It's a port city. It's on the northeast coast. And once I got into my groove there, what I really realized I was there to do was to really refocus on my professional endeavors, my podcast being one of them, which is how you and I had got connected. So it was more than I could have hoped for. It was a wonderful time.
That's awesome. And that's also, okay, let's back up to your intro and your background to see how did you create the life that you could sell a house and you could go work for in Europe, just drop of the hat.
Well, I mean, I was always somebody that went to work. You know, I wasn't a kid that didn't have a job or wasn't earning money somehow, some way from probably when I was 11 years old on. Then when I went to college, I went straight to work after that. I didn't take time off, which it's weird because I've had some moments where I've been like, man, I should have taken that whole summer off after graduation and traveled the world and done all the things. But I've now been doing that later in my career. And it's been, I think, probably better for me because I'm appreciative of it so much more. You know, I quit my corporate job about a year ago. I took all of Q4 last year off. And then at the beginning of 2024, I went out on my own as a consultant. And I had a really unique opportunity with a startup that I was working with to go through an accelerator program called Techstars. They were a pre-seed startup. They had gotten into the program. And for me to be able to go through that with them as a business consultant was truly life-changing. My network has grown exponentially. I learned so much about the pre-seed startup world and about startups in general. I often say it was a crash course in all things startup. So, and then it coincidentally, it was perfect timing for where my podcast was going because I had started having lots of different entrepreneurs on, and through marketing efforts and all of that, I've been, having more and more entrepreneurs reaching out to me asking to tell their stories. But to answer your question, you know, more bluntly, I had saved money, and then when I sold my house, I sold it, I believe, at a very great time from compared to when I bought it. So it was nice to be able to give myself that time. Although I spent so much of it working that I don't necessarily feel like it was just a long vacation. It was really to get refocused and recentered and ready for 2025.
I mean, you leave the country, especially with such a different time zone.
Yeah.
Like, I get so much more work when I can respond to the 50 emails and text messages without getting responses again before I finish. You know what I mean? I started in 50. By the time I'm like, sweet, I got 20 left. And then the first 30 start responding. You're just like, this never freaking ends. But if you're working out of office hours, right? People don't respond. I feel like it's so much more effective. Do you feel like a lot of that was just separation? And I also want to ask you about the language. How'd you start? I mean, do a lot of people in Greece? I went to Greece. I don't feel like people were speaking English. How'd you get around?
There was a few questions there. So let me see. Yes. Responding. No, it's fine. Because one of the things that was actually my favorite was waking up in the morning and just my notifications being on fire because, the US had been going about their day while I was sleeping. So I would wake up to, WhatsApps and text messages and emails and notifications on different social apps. And I was like, ooh, this is so fun. That was like my morning coffee routine was check all of the things and drink a cup of coffee. And yes, it is absolutely absolutely nice. I would find that during the noon hour, that was like really when everybody was, you know, winding down and going to sleep. So I could just blast through my email, respond to everybody, and then not feel like I was getting that influx of everything coming back. As far as the language goes, a lot of people in Greece do speak English. I would say it's, you know, it varies in ability, right? I mean, I certainly had some conversations where I was asked to speak more slowly. I had some conversations where I was told, I'm sorry, I don't know how to explain that to you in English. And then I had some folks that I became friends with who spoke wonderful English. I did try to learn some Greek to, you know, not only to just be respectful, but to, you know, try to immerse myself a little bit more in the culture.
I want to hear it. One word, one phrase, Nikki.
I mean, so basically you could walk into a shop, for example, and you could say like, yasas, like kalimera, which is basically means like, hi, good morning. So, I mean, even the littlest.
That's so cool though. You just need those little things, mm-hmm. especially if they know you're American and you're trying. They're like, oh, cool, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's cool that you started learning some.
It goes a long way.
There's so many, I guess, pivots mm-hmm. that we're talking about, especially here in the last year.
Yeah.
If you fast forwarded 2 years, 5 years, mm-hmm. what would success look like to you?
Gosh.
Like how would you define if you're reaching the success mark?
You know, I think that what it would look like to me is to still feel this sense of fulfillment with whatever it is that I'm doing and to still be really, really excited about everything that I'm doing. But also to be, you know, to have the level of income that I know that I'm capable of achieving just on my own. I have really, really enjoyed being out and about in the world working for myself. I find it to be so invigorating, and coming across other entrepreneurs is just so much fun. And I love this community that I've become a part of and that I'm building. So I want to continue doing that. I would love for my podcast to be, you know, ranking on the charts and to be really, really successful, because I enjoy it so much. It is such a life-giving piece of who I've become. And you know, I would like to have I envision the home that I create for the future is just like very white and then very colorful on the inside with bright colors and very warm, and a place where, you know, people want to come and enjoy a glass of wine and talk about what's going on in their life and their passions.
Very defined. But I'm going to point out something else that I loved even more.
Yeah.
The first two things you said is fulfillment and excitement, mm-hmm. which those are in your control.
You know,
we could hit another pandemic. We could mm-hmm. hit a hurricane, whatever, and something happens and you're not going to get the house mm-hmm. or the income or something like that. But that wasn't the first thing you listed. And I don't know if anybody's, because I asked that question, you know, it's usually, here's my metrics. Like if somebody asked me that a few years ago, I want 1,000 Dirty Dough stores, you know, that was it. It had nothing to do with the emotional side, but why do I want 1,000 stores? Or why do you want that house? And it mm-hmm. does come back to, well, I just want to feel fulfilled, excited, happy, whatever. So is there anything in your past, I guess, why are you the only one that starts with the emotions when everybody else is starting with material goals?
I don't know, but I think that it really, to me, boils down to just where I'm at in my life. And I think that I have now grasped onto gratitude as my foundation. And I think that if you are operating from a place of gratitude with everything that you are doing, it makes life that much sweeter and that much more enjoyable. You know, but there's a lot of discipline that comes along with building a life where you do feel fulfilled and you do feel excited. I mean, it doesn't just happen. You don't just wake up and you're successful and you have all of the things that you want. So I think that there's a lot of different things that go hand in hand with creating that. But I think that it's so important to recognize that what you want is within your reach if you're willing to put in the work to go and get it.
And I love the gratitude, and you hear that and you're like, of course, you know, mm-hmm. and then it's but it's applying it, right? Is there any tips, tricks, routines that you can suggest to listeners on, like, if you want to focus more on gratitude, here's some actionable steps.
So I would say, you know, just be really grateful for what you have. You know, it's so easy to get caught up in the hustle and bustle of life, of work, of, you know, kids, if you have them, of, you know, significant others, friends, family, all of the things. It's so easy to get caught up. And social media, while it is amazing, it can also be to the detriment, because then that comparison comes along and you start looking at other people and like, well, they have that, why don't I have that? Or they have that, I want that, how am I going to get that? Or I'm never going to be able to do that. So I think just really taking a look and saying, hey, look at all that I actually have and look at all that I'm able to provide and for myself, right? And I'm not saying that like people don't have bad days. We're all going to have bad days and bad moments, but I make it a habit of reminding myself when I am having those moments that there's someone out there that would literally kill to be in my shoes on my worst day. And so if I can remember that, then that is really helpful with gratitude. I'm also like a big proponent of like believing that you already have what you want and acting like you already have what you want. So I do that, you know. I act like, oh, I've already have like a super successful podcast. I act like I already have, you know, the level of income that I want for myself. Like I act like that because I know that like I am like calling that into my into my life.
A lot to unpack there. One thing you talked about is being grateful for what you already have. Mm-hmm. So it's like the happiness gap is where you're at and then where you want to be or your those wants.
Yeah.
So there's two ways to bridge the gap. One, you go get those wants. The issue with that is you bridge the gap, your dopamine goes back to baseline and then you just go to the next want. Right? Or you can bridge that gap by wanting what you already have. Mm-hmm. And there's actual like meditative practices that are really helpful and really, for me, really heavy. One that I went through was actually imagining my kids dying my wife dying and loved ones dying. And then you come back from it and you're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like I have them, you know, I already have what I want. So you kind of imagine what you already have that you don't have it. And then you come back to it is a really good way, to want what you already have. So
no, that's terrifying. But you know, it's actually funny because I do have, for some reason, for a very long time, I will have moments where I will sit and I will imagine like horrible things happening, like things that I don't want to happen. And then it's all, and I can get emotional about it. I'm like, oh my God, like this is how I would feel if this were to happen. And I'm so grateful that that hasn't happened. So maybe I've been doing that all along and I just didn't realize there was an actual, you know, like
thought process behind it. It's like reverse something. I don't know.
Okay.
But it's an actual thing because it plays off of the all suffering, desire is the root of all suffering. And so what's desire?
Yeah.
Desire is the same as expectation. Mm-hmm. Expectation is the same as want. So all suffering is stemming from those wants. So if you could just want what you already have and not something else, then there's no way left to suffer, which is kind of an oversimplification, but it is also kind of true. So,
well, it is true. I mean, because, you know, we can get so caught up in material things. And I think that's been one thing that's been so nice as I've been back in the United States for the last week is that I realized, like, you know, I mean, I came home to the stuff that I did keep, which is all in boxes in a bedroom at my brother's house. So I still have been pretty much existing with the stuff that I traveled with. I know I'm going to have to break into some of those boxes because the weather's starting to get cold, but it's also, it was such a nice, like, acknowledgement that I really don't need that much to pursue my passions, to be happy, to be fulfilled, to have a nice life. I mean, even now it's like, I've got a microphone, a ring light and my laptop and some earphones and I'm recording podcasts every, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. And it's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely more is more is better. And it's, people are realizing that's not the case. Like you have so many people promoting, if you could just be more, be a better person, then all your problems will be solved.
Right.
It's just like more. If you just make more money, it's like, no, if you just make more money, again, going back to that gap, you momentarily bridge that gap. Mm-hmm. But if you understand anything about the brain, like it doesn't last and it's not supposed to last. That's what causes your dopamine needs to reset in order for it, for you to feel it again, for you to be, you know, motivated to go get that next goal. So anyways, realizing that is, it takes a while to to figure that out. And then once you figure it out, to practice it is a whole nother thing. You mentioned early on working, like as a kid, I was the same way, kind of that hustle mentality. Why? I mean, was it family, culture, religion? What made you like that?
I think just kind of probably the way we were brought up. I mean, my parents both, you know, come from working class families. My mom's parents were immigrants from Greece, you know, came over here, not speaking the language. My dad is one of six, then grew up in a, you know, very lower class, lower income town in New Jersey. There was, I think, three bedrooms and one bathroom. Could you imagine one bathroom for eight people? I mean, nothing sounds worse. So they really instilled in us, you know, the value of hard work, and also that they weren't just gonna like hand us money for being a kid, and that they weren't just gonna buy us whatever we wanted just because we saw something cool on TV and said, hey, I want that. So they kind of taught us like, hey, you have to earn your keep around here and work for what it is that you want. So, you know, I was doing chores around the house. I think I was doing the dishes from, you know, 10 on. I was doing my own laundry from the time I could operate the machine. And then as soon as I could start babysitting, I remember begging my mom, like, do you think anyone will let me babysit? Do you think anyone will let me babysit? And finally at 11, I hit that threshold where someone, for whatever reason, entrusted me at home alone with their children, which looking back, I'm like, was that the smartest thing? But thankfully, all was good.
But you're like, they probably were looking for a discount babysitter, and that was...
No kidding. No kidding. And then, you know, when I was 15, that was when you could get a work permit. And I, you know, again, turned 15, went and got the work permit and ended up at a pizza joint in town and came home smelling like oregano and pizza sauce multiple times per week.
Do you have any siblings, Nikki?
I do. I have a younger brother.
Okay. How is his work ethic translated kind of in that same, you know, family environment? Was it similar, or did he take a different path?
No, I would say he is definitely a self-taught entrepreneur. He is incredibly hardworking. He is one of the most curious people I've probably ever come across. So he loves to learn. I mean, there's not much you can text him and ask him about that he won't have an answer for. And if he doesn't, he's like, well, let me figure it out because this sounds kind of cool. Maybe I want to know about this. So it's definitely, you know, runs in our genes.
That's awesome. It runs in the genes, and hats off to your parents for raising you like that. Awesome.
Thanks.
Right?
Yeah, they're pretty great.
That's awesome. Okay. now shifting gears again to any time in your career or your life, more focusing on the emotional side, but what's been one of the hardest or the hardest moment in your life?
Ooh. Well, gosh. I mean, there's always like challenges.
It doesn't have to be the hardest, just whatever comes to mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I feel like I grew professionally pretty significantly over that first year of COVID. I had taken on a new role at a new company. So I went from working at Intel, which is, you know, a 100,000 employee worldwide company, to leaving that after 12 years and then going to a small, you know, well-established tech company that had about 200 employees when I arrived. So not only was I moving companies, I was also taking on a leadership role that I hadn't taken on before. So it was a huge step up in my career. I was really, really excited. I was working for the COO, and then COVID happened. And I had a team of 25 people that were all reporting to me, and we had to do a headcount reduction. And that was incredibly challenging. It was very tough. And then rebuilding after that was also incredibly tough. So I think that was
the tough piece on the downsizing. Were you having to let them go? Like, you're having the conversations, and were you also having to identify who it was?
Yeah. So I had pretty much, had a meeting with my boss, and it was like, we need to cut your department by 33%. And I had only been on the job for 9 weeks.
My gosh. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So I, you know, unfortunately had to make some tough decisions. And I was looking at the business on how we were running things, on how I had started to, you know, make some changes and look at growth and scalability and profitability, and made some tough calls. But I think, I still think in retrospect, they were the right calls. You know, because I mean, like anyone, like everyone during those first few weeks of COVID, we didn't know what we didn't know. Nobody really knew what was going on. So we all did the best that we possibly could.
Yeah. So firing, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot. COVID was hard for everybody, but like that sitting down one-to-one and say, you don't have a job anymore. That sucks because mm-hmm. I'm about to do that. And that's like the worst thing.
The worst. Totally.
One thing that I guess not even firing, but one thing that does help with that, growing Dirty to, we got to 200 employees in like a year and a half and was like, what the hell? yeah. How do you pay all these people? You know, now you have them. Now how do you pay them all? And you're always worried about, we're always fundraising. And probably the most like crushing thing is like, what if this fails? Then it's not 200 employees that don't get paid. It's all of their families and all that, you know, and I make kind of a big deal. Like they need me. Mm-hmm. Or else they're not going to survive. And then I looked into it deeper. I'm like, who the hell are you? Like, they don't need you. They survived without you. Yeah. They don't need Dirty Dough. They'll go get another job just like they had another job before, you know? So I think I did put a little bit too much pressure on like, man, I'm ruining their. It's like, no, they know how to take care of themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. And kind of giving that autonomy, I guess, a little bit back to them, at least for me, has helped when I have to have those mental battles or actual firing conversations. So on the flip side though, mm-hmm. proud accomplishment. What's something, and again, just whatever comes to your mind first, what's something that you've accomplished that you're really proud of?
I mean, I think I'm just really proud overall of like my independence. Like I that might seem like something broad and kind of like, okay, what, like a lot of people are independent, but I mean, I have done some unique things in my life and I've done them on my own that I think are, you know, kind of cool, where I certainly get people questioning like, oh my gosh, why are you doing that? Or how are you doing that? Or I don't know that I could do that. So I think just having the independent spirit of wanting more and wanting to see more and wanting to experience more, but not feeling like I can't do it on my own or I need to wait until I have X, Y, or Z in order to do so.
Yeah, I love that. What about an event? Something that like an accomplishment? Mm-hmm. One event.
I have never been in like a direct sales role, right? And but I will say I'm incredibly proud. When I was at my last role at SkySlope, I basically ran a business with inside the business at SkySlope. So a couple of years before I came on board, they had started offering transaction coordination as a service, and it was its little business inside the company. We had our own P&L. Everything was, you know, all of my team was paid by the money that my team was bringing in. So we were just like our own little bubble that existed within the company. Transaction coordination is a service that I call nice to have, right? It's kind of like having someone clean your house or taking your car to get washed. It's not something that you can't do on your own, but if you could choose not to, you'd rather pay somebody to do it. So as a realtor, having a transaction coordinator is absolutely something that they would rather outsource, because it's all the detailed paperwork and running the escrow timeline, doing all the things that like realtors, they just want to be out selling, making deals, getting listings, getting buyer clients. So as we started the regrowth after COVID, we had changed every single process, every single procedure that we had. We had changed how the team was organized, how we ran the business. And we were obviously like looking for more business. I had two dedicated salespeople. They had monthly goals. They were out grinding. But one of the largest brokerages in the United States, they had thought, hey, you know what, if we offer transaction coordination as a service to our agents, they'll probably all just love it and it'll make us so much money. And they had mapped it out, and then it wasn't happening. And they were like, why is this not happening? Like, why is this not happening the way we've penciled it out? We thought this was going to be like a multi-million dollar annual, you know, revenue generator. Well, they were about 2 years behind me in my learning curve on how to run this business. And so I got connected with one of their senior vice presidents and we had this conversation, and I was just like, you sound like me 2 years ago. I get it. It's tough. So they had decided to close down their internal department because it was hemorrhaging money. And I convinced them to have my team be their preferred transaction coordinator, you know, group to offer to their agents as a service. So we did, you know, have a revenue share model that we put into place, but I was really proud of making making that deal, because it's a deal that still is in place, that still is happening now. And at the time, like I could confidently say, like, nobody knows more about running transaction coordinator business, like in the United States, than I do, because nobody else was doing it the way that we were doing it.
Yeah. And that confidence that you're coming off with is like, I believe you with that. Yeah. Like, you're going to do it. And that's so cool. I mean, that also speaks to the independence, right? You're like, I'm proud mm-hmm. of the independence. And then you're like, I have my own bubble. Like, I am independently managing mm-hmm. this. And I independently went and got this ginormous client. So I asked the question, what's the, a proud accomplishment? And again, you said independence, which is like an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
And what I was looking for, but I didn't specify, was an event. Now you gave me the event.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing when I asked you about like the goals. You're starting with the emotion, and then you go to the material. And on this one, the same thing, because typically it's okay, what's my biggest accomplishment? I landed that deal. And then what I was going to ask you is, how long did that high last?
Oh gosh. I mean, I'm still very proud of it, certainly. And it lasted a little bit of time, but then it was like, that was when the rubber met the road, right? We signed the contract,
you have to start going.
But then we had to prove that we were able to bring on their agents and then service their agents to their agents' expectations. So it was like, okay, we got this. Now we got to prove that like this was the right choice for them. And like I said, it still is a partnership that's ongoing. So there's definitely proof in the pudding that it worked.
So what I'm getting at is like when you have these goals or accomplishments, you think they're going to be a super big high, and they mm-hmm. often are.
Yeah.
But they go back to zero. So it's like, man, if I'm dedicating all my life to getting that material goal, which I love mm-hmm. that you weren't, then it's so fleeting. And then even when I asked you about the proud accomplishment, you didn't choose an event that was fleeting. You chose independence that is ongoing. So that's mm-hmm. so cool that.
Oh, thanks.
How you're setting up your life and your goals are not so much set up on external factors.
Mm-hmm.
And then anyways, I think that is definitely the way to live the most joyful, happy life, is trying to bring it internally, talking about independence and mm-hmm. excitement, all that. So I love that.
Well, thank you.
What do you feel like in your past on mental health mindset mm-hmm. has helped you the most? Anything that you do regularly to make sure that you're in gratitude or any of those other tips and tricks that we've talked about?
Yeah. I mean, I am a very routined person, and I do have a very high sense of self-awareness. I think self-awareness is also one of the top keys to personal success and forward, like, growth. I think that we have to be self-aware of how we present ourselves in the world. What is our energy putting out? How are we communicating with other people? How do we treat other people? And I think that a lot of that does boil down to discipline and routine. So I am the biggest advocate for exercise, getting outside, going for a walk. I mean, there probably isn't a day that goes by that I'm not outside for at minimum a 30-minute walk, usually more than that. So that's really, really important to me. But also this, having the self-awareness to acknowledge when I am feeling off, I think it certainly has benefited me. Like, I'll be honest, before I'd made the decision to sell my house, I had noticed that I was not feeling that great. And what I mean by that is I was still getting up every day. I was still going out for a walk and then coming back and doing my strength routines that I do, still doing all of the things, but I felt like they were harder. I felt like I was out for a walk and my legs were just, I didn't want to do it. And I thought, gosh, I really don't like feeling this way. So when I made the decision to put the house on the market, it still also took a few days for me to shake out of that. And then I remember one day I woke up and I was like, I feel like myself again. And that was a really good feeling. So, and I haven't lost that feeling since. So I think for me, acknowledging when I'm going down a path that mentally is not good for me, and that if I continue going down that path, could have some negative repercussions more than I want to deal with or feel. Is, looking inward and saying like, hey, do I need to make a big change right now?
Right on the target. Again, always looking inward. I couldn't agree more on that. And this year's probably been the hardest year of my life. And the change was I had to start paying attention to how I felt, not just like, okay, why do I not want to get on a phone call anymore? Why don't I really want to record a podcast? Mm-hmm. And then rather than just avoiding it, like, shit, I have to, you know, then it was like, well, let's just notice it. Like, what is there? And I'm closing my eyes. I'm like, okay, there's a resistance that I don't want to podcast, but why? Like, what does it feel like? And then you feel it and it kind of just goes away. Or you don't, and you just, it just stays with you for months or for years, right? So really, really important to be self-aware. I couldn't agree more on that. Okay, last question for you, Nikki. What is the legacy you want to leave behind?
I mean, I want people to be like, man, she was a lot of fun. And she, you know, was really kind. And, you know, I learned from her. It's so funny. I had this conversation with somebody the other day, and I was talking about how, you know, as people, we are who we are, and there are some things that we just naturally do. And then there are some things that people do for us or say to us that they're just being them, but it's so profound and it has this major effect on us where you're like, oh, man, I'm going to remember that moment for the rest of my life. And if you say something to that person, they're like, oh yeah, oh, of course, like no worries. You know, it's like, it's just them being them. So I want people, when they think about me, to just think positively. And I want to be, you know, thought of as just like a good fun.
I like the fun
time, you know.
you're fun. That's what I tell my kids. I'm like, life is about fun and some learning. There's nothing that you need to be overly seriously about in life. It's just fun and learning. So I think you're a great reflection on that. Nikki, where do our listeners connect with you?
Oh gosh. Well, so two places.
And your podcast too.
Yes. So two places. You can go to my website. That is nikki-corbett.com. nikki-corbett.com. And then on YouTube, I am at Round Two Podcast, and on all the other socials at Round Two Podcast. So, and then also feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I am working really hard over there to grow my personal brand and to grow the podcast. So I love new LinkedIn connections. So would love to meet more of you.
We'll include all of that in the show notes. Nikki, awesome. Thanks for jumping on.
Great. Thank you so much.